closer.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Radio Labyrinth. This is season 6, episode 50. It's incorrect on all of your podcatchers and everything, but we're just going to leave it the way it is. So it's episode 58 in my head, and because I screwed up. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You are listening to the show. First off, I want to thank our guests from our guest from Radio Labyrinth Presents Interviews. We had Roy Wood Jr. on. I hope you had a chance to listen to that. If you haven't, go back and listen. It was a lot of fun. He's a cool dude. Do you guys have fun?
Yeah,
he's a really cool guy.
I'm looking forward to a special on Comedy Central coming up at the end of the month.
Yeah, I'll check that out. I've got a lot of research to do because his prank calls are funny as shit. So now I want to watch some of his old comedy specials. So go check that out if you missed it. Let's see what else. We have upcoming presents next week, I believe it is. It's going to be two comedians who were both responsible for putting on the Red Clay Comedy Festival, which has been going on for a number of years in Atlanta. We have Michael Albanese and Gilbert LaWand, and they will both be on. And both were staples of the Regular Guys show at one point. And of course, Michael Albanese was one of the original doctrinaires on the Von Hessler Doctrine when it was just a podcast in Eric's basement. And so that's cool with you guys. Yeah. So anyway, that'll be next week. What else? We have new t-shirts and stickers. I'm going to assume that we'll be able to put up an image of that while we're talking. I know that we can. I know that we do. And I hope that you're looking at that. Because, you know, if you're listening, you don't get to see all the cool stuff that Dustin busts his ass to do. So check it out sometime on YouTube, Radio Labyrinth. You can just put that in the search bar or just go to YouTube.com. It's Radio Labyrinth Podcast.
That is correct.
I just have a bad memory. I don't, it's saved, so I never have to type it in. Steph isn't with us tonight, but she will be back next week. By the way, going back to the t-shirts, if you'd like to become a Radio Labyrinth Patreon member, you can go to patreon.com/Tim Andrews. And if you sign up at the producer level, which is $25, you will get a t-shirt and some stickers sent to you. So that would be pretty neat, wouldn't it? So go ahead and sign up if you are so inclined. And let's see what else. I'm rambling a mile a minute because I just had half a pot of coffee. So I took my nap today and I had a bunch of coffee.
Wind yourself down, then speed yourself back up.
Yeah. Wind down, speed up, die of a heart attack at 68. Or maybe sooner.
What he's not telling you, Dustin, is that it was a pumpkin spice latte.
No, I did have pumpkin spice yogurt that I got at Sprouts today. That was pretty good. So there's a lot to talk about in the media world, plenty to talk about. There's a television show that's on Netflix that everybody's going crazy over. It's called Squid Game, and that comes from South Korea. And I hope we're all watching that show. Many Saints of Newark dropped last weekend. I hope we all had a chance to view that. We're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. Jeff posted a question. What did everybody do during the Facebook downtime? I didn't really notice. It didn't really bother me all that much. Jeff, are you still in Facebook jail?
Got two more weeks.
Two more weeks. So you didn't give a shit.
He's in the middle of a stretch.
Yeah, he's in the stretch. Dustin, you were probably working, so it didn't bother you either.
Yeah, I got off work and went to go check and like realized Instagram didn't work and Facebook didn't work. And I was like, wait a minute, what's going on? And then I had to go to TikTok. And then on TikTok, it seems like everybody migrated because TikTok was the only thing available at the time. So all these TikTokers are just explaining what's happening on Facebook and Instagram to all the new people that they're getting pulled into TikTok for like a 7-hour stretch. And then as quickly as it, you know, went away, it slowly kind of started coming back about 7 or 8 o'clock that night.
Yeah, a lot of people were speculating why it happened or what had happened. I think it, you know, there's conspiracies abounding everywhere, of course, but it has a lot to do maybe with that Facebook whistleblower I think that Zuckerberg had to go in there and clean everything up. He did it himself. You know, he's like Santa Claus. He can do the whole thing in one night. I'm sure he checks it daily and makes sure that people are on the up and up. But this Facebook whistleblower that dropped on 60 Minutes the night before all this happened. So it's hard to not kind of like connect the dots yourself, or at least try to connect the dots and think those two things are related. You have to really go into the conspiracy realm of the internet to find people talking about that. Or you could just watch the news and she's heralded as some sort of hero for working there for 2 months and stealing all the shit off their server. But as usual, I don't pay too much attention to that kind of thing. I just know Facebook bad needs to be fixed. Facebook bad.
Well, it's funny too, that all these people that are putting those conspiracy theories out and are talking about how bad Facebook is, all their conversations seem to be had on Facebook.
Right. Exactly. So Facebook, you think would delete them if they were upset about it. I don't know. That's one of those things when the news broke, I'm thinking, wow, I got to really dive into this. And then I listened to her speak and I said, I've had enough of this, because it's the up talking and the vocal fry. And then I just realized it's all ridiculous because she used to work for the government. So anywho, enough about that. Who cares? It's just Facebook. You know, I go on there to see my 100-year-old great aunt sing a song, and she lives out in New Mexico. She's my grandma's sister, and my grandma made it to 95, but Skipper, she made it to 100, and that's pretty cool. And she still got all of her wits about her. Nice. And to me, that's what Facebook, I like looking at, on Facebook, I like looking at stuff from our hometown, Mansfield, Pennsylvania. You know, there's a couple of groups where people post old pictures and stores and, you know, old yearbook photos and shit like that. And then there's also Ira Malcolm, our old co-host.
Don't post any Dr. Detroit quotes in there, though.
Right. Don't post anything that can be misconstrued as a hate speech or bullying. But what is it called?
Sorry, your mom blew up.
Yeah, so it's quotes from 80s movies, and it's a lot of fun to look through and talk about. So if you're into that sort of thing, check it out. Yankees lost, so I just want everybody to know that I don't care. The Yankees lost a one-game playoff to the Red Sox.
Your wife was happy.
She didn't really pay attention. Yeah, you know, she's just like, oh, yay, the Red Sox won. But here's the thing. The Yankees and the Red Sox had this huge rivalry for years and years and years that went back to, because Babe Ruth left the Red Sox and went to the Yankees. And so there was this, you know, big mythology around all that. And then there was 1978 when they had the one game playoff, the Boston Massacre, when Boston basically collapsed in the month of September. So the Yankees played a one game playoff. Bucky Dent hit a home run over the Green Monster, and the Yankees ended up winning that game. One game playoff, they went and beat the Kansas City Royals and then went on to play the Dodgers in the World Series. And then there was a big, big rivalry throughout the 80s and the 90s, and the Yankees ended up always beating them in the playoffs until 2004, when the curse was broken. And since that curse was broken, the Red Sox have won 4 World Series titles. The Yankees have won 1. And I was talking to a buddy of mine who's a Boston Red Sox fan, but he's like, you know, that curse is gone. It's broken. That rivalry isn't the same as it was. So everything that they're playing up this one game playoff with all the, you know, oh, Babe Ruth and the rivalry and the time that Pedro punched Don Zimmer in the head, which was funny, almost as funny as Don Zimmer running to the mound to fight Pedro. But it to me, it doesn't have that feel anymore. I know you guys aren't really big into baseball. Jeff's antagonizingly a Red Sox fan, I think. Why do you like the Red Sox so much?
Because they're the best team.
Yeah. That's right.
I mean, it sounds like the it's run its course as far as their, you know, the rivalry, you know, it probably aged itself out at this point. 2004. I mean, yeah, you know, we're coming up on 20 years ago. So, I mean,
right.
The curse has been reversed, though. You don't want to end the new curse. You got to send Babe Ruth's ashes back to
the
Boston.
Yankees really want to win. They'll get good pitching and get rid of their manager, Aaron Boone, who I don't like very much, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, like, my overall point is that I'm not obsessed with baseball like I once was. I'm more obsessed with shit from the 70s and 80s when I grew up. And of course, those championship runs of the late 90s and the early 2000s. But yeah, I really, you know, aside from a couple of people, I don't really know who plays. I don't really know who pitches. And I really just don't care anymore. But I do like baseball. So I guess my thing now is I'm rooting for the Red Sox, hopefully to win the American League, and the Braves, of course, to win the National League. And that would be a fun World Series, the Braves versus the Red Sox. It's unlikely to happen, but that's what I want. All right. So before we talk about some of the stuff that we want to talk about tonight, we got to do our October old horror movie of the week. Pick a horror movie from the past to talk about it since it is Halloween season. And my pick this week is Paranormal Activity from 2007. You guys remember Paranormal Activity?
The special effects were somebody yanking on a sheet off camera with a fishing line.
And throwing a pillow at a camera in a corner.
Yeah, this
and then standing still for 20 hours or whatever.
Right. But it was scary. I thought it was a scary movie originally made for $15,000. Okay. Written and directed by Oren Peli, starring Katie Featherston and Micah Sloat, who played her husband. $15,000. And they showed it at a bunch of film festivals. Paramount bought it, gave him $200,000 to do some special effects and stuff. And it did really, really well. I think it's one of the most successful independent films of all time. Got a nationwide release in 2009, and it's one of those, I guess, found footage type of movies that were popular back then. But I thought it was a pretty good film, and it spawned seven or eight sequels.
And Blumhouse's entire career.
Yeah. Which I haven't seen any of them. I've just only seen the first one. I tried to watch the second one, and I couldn't do it.
You've seen them all. If you've seen the first one, you've seen them all with just variations of where the camera is placed.
Okay. Katie Featherston, I don't think she's in all of them. She may be, I don't know. I looked at her IMDb and she doesn't seem to have an awful lot of work going on these days. But on Rotten Tomatoes, the film has an overall approval rating of 83% and it has a 7 out of 10 rating. Like I said, I've seen zero sequels to it. And as it would happen, another one is dropping on October 29th called Paranormal Activity Next of Kin. So hopefully there's a lot of incest in that
one. Yeah. Incest and closed circuit TVs. That ought to be interesting.
What do people in Kentucky do for Halloween? They pump can. Anyway.
I'm stuck in the dryer, step ghost.
Let me help you out of the dryer after I bang you, step ghost.
Step ghost.
Step ghost. Ooh, my step ghost is stuck in the dryer. Oh, I really don't know what you're referring to, Jeff.
Oh, okay. Never mind then. mine's Shaun of the Dead. I don't know if you call it a horror movie. I guess you have to because of the zombies.
Yeah, it's a horror comedy.
Yeah.
That's funny. How I found out about Shaun of the Dead was listening to, I guess it was the Regular Guys. Because remember, Steve went and seen it as a free preview.
Yeah.
And he was talking about it on the radio. And I was like, I got to see this movie. And that was what got me to watching it. And, I love Edgar Wright. I mean, everything he does is he can't do anything bad as far as I'm concerned.
He cast Kevin Spacey in Baby Driver.
Yeah.
Well, nobody knew that Kevin Spacey was such a creep. Or at least they didn't talk about it until much later.
That's the only thing he's ever done wrong, though. They need to CGI him out of that movie, so because it's such a fucking awesome movie.
Why does he need to be CGI'd out of it?
Because
why?
Because he's a bad man.
Well, that doesn't mean he needs to be removed from the film.
No, you could just deep fake Robert Shaw's face over his.
Yeah. Or just put Alec Baldwin in there or something.
Yeah, didn't take OJ out of the Naked Gun movies, and what he did allegedly was far worse than what Kevin Spacey did. Kevin Spacey didn't cut anybody's heads off
that you know of.
Well,
not yet, anyway.
I was just I just finished listening to Kevin Pollak's audiobook, and in a portion where he's talking about The Usual Suspects, he's like just all this praise for Kevin Spacey, and there's so much of it out there that you're just like, I wonder.
All right, mine is again another John Carpenter film, The Prince of Darkness. It's one of my go-tos for around October.
Yeah,
1987. This is the one that had some cameos with Alice Cooper as one of the homeless people in front of the church. But the idea is a group of graduate students, they uncover this canister in an abandoned church, and they go to study it and realize that it holds, I guess, the devil inside of it, or the son of the devil inside of it. And it lets itself out at a certain point, and they get possessed, and it's a battle for humanity. If they can stop this process from happening, they can stop the end of the world. And there was the whole thing with they all dream the same dream because someone was like sending a message through tachyons back through time to warn them about what was happening. That always stuck with me when I was younger. In scared particular. The shit out of me.
Jeff and I saw that in the movie, and it took me about 2 or 3 weeks to get over it because it was so creepy and so new. You'd never seen anything like that, and like, we're coming at you from the future, that weird like angel thing, and everything was green.
And John Carpenter loves liquid, so he loves to play with liquid. So he had like dripping things that were dripping upside down and like creating a pool on the ceiling, and and all of it. But Donald Pleasance, the cast, his cast was a usual John Carpenter cast. He had Donald Pleasance in there, Jameson Parker, from Simon and Simon. He was kind of the main character,
right?
Victor Wong, who again, he would work with again in Big Trouble in Little China, as well as Dennis Dunn, the main character from Big Trouble in Little China.
Well, hadn't that come out before this?
Big Trouble, I think it was the same. They filmed them back to back, but Big Trouble in Little China didn't come out until 1 year later.
Oh, okay. 1980.
But yeah, Suzanne Blanchard was in it as well. I think she was she on China Beach.
And All My Children, I know that for sure.
Yeah, she was. But yeah, it had a really, really cool cast of, John Carpenter's usually character actors that he loves to use. So, just great performances. It was really creepy, and it's good to throw on, and watch once a year. So I always try to jump to it at least during the Halloween season and watch.
It still holds up, I think. And of course, again, Alice Cooper as the street schizo.
Eating bugs.
All those John Carpenter movies hold up, I think.
Yeah,
they're rewatchable as hell. Even today, even with all the modern special effects that we have now, his stuff still looks cool.
Yeah, I agree with you. Really,
and it's available on Amazon.
Oh, really? To watch for free? Do you got to rent it?
It's on Prime.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
maybe I'll do that. All right, so we may as well dive into some of these shows and movies and everything. I'm assuming you guys both watched The Many Saints of Newark.
I watched about a half hour of it. But you can talk about it because I wasn't huge into The Sopranos in the first place.
Okay. Jeff?
I watched it.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was okay.
I give it 8 slices of gabagoo out of 10.
You can slice gabagoo?
I don't know if I'd go 8, but...
6?
Yeah.
6 slices of gabagoo. Okay, Jeff.
I didn't see, a lot of people were saying shit like, oh, these people are fucking like SNL characters, like the guy that played Silvio.
Yeah.
And I thought that his impression was awesome. And the way his hair, he was like balding, and then he had that toupee on.
John Magaro played Silvio Dante. Yeah.
And he did the walk and everything. I thought he was very good.
He had done a movie with David Chase prior to this one. And I forget the name of it. It was about a band, a New Jersey band. And
Eddie and the Cruisers?
No. Maybe Eddie and the Cruisers 3. But, little Steven did, Steven Van Zandt did the music. So he met him there and they started working together and they became friends. So, Steven Van Zandt's wife, who is, I think her name is Maureen, and she was in The Sopranos. She played his wife on The Sopranos as well, Gab. She loved his impression. So, I'm such a fan, so I follow all the people. And throughout the production of the film, she's saying, I can't wait for you guys to see John Magaro as Silvio Dante. But if you guys don't mind indulging me, I want to talk about it a little bit, if that's cool. And feel free to interrupt and jump in. But so The Many Saints of Newark, The name Moltisanti means many saints, Moltisantis. And the story, if you're not familiar, and by the way, spoiler alerts, if you haven't seen this and you want to see it, The Many Saints of Newark, do not watch any more of the show and come back after you watch it. So there are a lot of characters that were either spoken about or not spoken about that we never saw on the original series. And those characters are played by, well, let's just start with the main character of the film. This is basically the story of Christopher's father, who we never see except for one picture when Christopher goes to the house to see his mom. And it was after he killed the cop. Anyway, that's another long story. Dickie Moltisanti, who's played by Alessandro Nivola. And it's his story, and it's that era. And you, there's kind of two different things. Let me back up a little bit. A surprise to me, because I didn't know anything about this, and it was never leaked or spoiled for me, is as the film opens, you see a shot panning through a cemetery, and it's the modern era, and you hear voices talking as it passes gravestones, and people are complaining or lamenting their lives. Then you realize, as it gets closer to Christopher Moltisanti's headstone, that it, and by the way, Michael Imperioli starts speaking, who is the narrator of the film, as Christopher is speaking to you from hell and talking about, this is how I got to hell, and I went to hell for Tony Soprano. And so it's pretty funny. So there's two points of the film. You have when Tony is a little boy, I think he's like 13 or whatever, and then when Tony is a teenager, those two different eras. And in the first era, the transitional piece for that, it goes from the 60s to the 70s. You hear Christopher Moltisanti say, this was after Neil Young gave that speech from the moon, which I bring up because there was a lot of comedic elements in The Many Saints of Newark, not as many as in The Sopranos, because The Sopranos always had really funny moments. And this had a little bit of it. I think Terry Winter wrote it. And I think that, I think Terry Winter and David Chase co-wrote the film. And but that's the kind of thing that Chase puts in these things. So anyway, another new character was Harold McBrayer, who was played by Leslie Odom Jr., who is a real good actor, Broadway actor, film actor, and television. He plays a gangster that he's an African-American gangster that works running numbers and shit for Dickie Moltisanti. And he ends up moving out of town and then coming back and working on his own. That's a whole sub story, because as the film is taking place, it's during the riots in Newark, and all the Italian families are watching the city burn in the 60s. Tony is very fascinated by this. In fact, there's one callback to the original season, into the original series. Do you remember when Tony's talking about his dad and he has the flashback that his dad keeps taking Janice to an amusement park? So he climbs in the car and, you know, gets in the trunk. And then as he gets out of the trunk, he sees his dad being arrested. Well, they reshot that with different actors and everything. So Bernthal comes out and says a line that someone else had said. So you see all that happen. And Harold McBrayer, who's played by Leslie Odom Jr., leaves and then comes back and he's running his own thing. And so they have a little friction there. Ray Liotta plays Hollywood Dick Moltisanti, who was Dickie Moltisanti's father. And he's really good. I loved Ray. Did you guys like Ray in this?
His character? No, but his performance was good.
Yeah. He played two characters, and he played Dickie's father, who just came back from Italy with, like, you know, the hot young wife, played by Michela De Rossi, who played Giuseppina, I can't say it, Moltisanti. She played this young wife that he brought back. And I won't spoil too much of it there, but of course he dies. And then Dickie goes to this prison. You see him walking in this prison. All of a sudden you see Ray Liotta again, and he's playing Salvatore Sally Moltisanti, who is his father's twin brother. Now, some people are saying you don't know if that's real or if it's Dickie Moltisanti creating this fake uncle because he feels guilt about his father's death. You'll have to watch it to find out, but he plays two different characters. So it's hard for me to think that he won't get nominated for something, like maybe an Emmy or a Golden Globe. I definitely think Alessandro Nivola get nominated for an Oscar for this. So if you guys jump in, by the way,
I'm trying to think if he's been nominated for anything before Alessandro.
I don't know, but he's fantastic. He gives off a Richie Aprile vibe, you know, when he's talking and he's doing, you know, the thing, he's talking like he's from Jersey, and this guy is, he's from New, you know, he's from that area, you know, but he really gives off a Richie Aprile thing. But the, you know, as I'm watching and listening and watching all these, you know, YouTube videos and stuff, I didn't know that they had asked, David Chase asked Ray Liotta to play Ralphie. Imagine how different that character would have been if he played Ralphie.
Wow.
No Joey Pants.
Right. Joey Pants made that role, but that's only because we saw him in that role. It would have been much different.
Did you think Tony's mom reminded you of Carmella at all?
I thought she looked more like Carmella than she looked like.
Yeah. I don't know why they made her so much like Carmella, like to show that Tony ended up marrying his mom, basically.
It might be. Yeah, there's a lot of that in there. There's a scene when, you know, Christopher is a baby and they're all going to the house to meet him, and Tony tries to hold him and the kid cries. Yeah, you didn't like me. And the old lady that nobody knows goes, babies bring shit over with them from the other side that we don't know. They know things. There's a lot of mystical shit going on.
Yeah. They seem to put a lot of that metaphysical. Well, that's, I mean,
it's from the series too.
Yeah. Very yeah. They use that a lot throughout the series. Everything had a meaning, or was a,
yes, everything has meaning in the Sopranos series and in this film. Everything has meaning. Chase doesn't do anything without there being a subtext to it. So you also have Joey Diaz as Buddha Bompensero, who is Pussy's, so he's Big Pussy's dad.
That's what I thought, yeah.
And he doesn't really say much, if at all.
Which is weird for Joey. Yeah. Usually you can't shut him up.
He must have taken a 500 milligram gummy before shooting.
His head came apart. Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Well, we already said spoiler alert, but yeah, his head got fucking. Boom. You're expecting it. You just see Joey Diaz brains all over the ground. And then you have Sopranos characters who are brought to life as their younger selves. So you have, we already said John Magaro as Silvio Dante, which I thought was great. Corey Stoll, he fucking nailed it as Corrado Soprano, Uncle Junior. He got the mannerisms. He, you know, it was him. It was definitely Corey Stoll, but you can tell that he really, you know, paid homage to the original character.
He's a great actor.
He is a great actor.
He's taken over on Billions.
I saw that.
Yeah, I saw that.
Billy Magnuson was a young Paulie Walnuts. I had a couple of good lines, a couple of very Paulie like lines. They're about to torture some dude with a drill in his teeth, and which means blood everywhere. And Paulie goes, "Nicky, I just got this suit."
That guy's awesome, man. We should try and get him on the show. He was in that episode of Your Pretty Face Is Going to Hell with Josh Warren.
Billy Magnuson?
Yeah, they were roommates.
Oh, he's a local guy.
I don't know if he still lives here, but
yeah, let's try.
He was here.
Yeah, definitely try to get him. He was amazing in that. William Ludwig was the younger Tony Soprano. Don't really know much about him, but Michael Gandolfini did a great job as the teenage Tony Soprano, and he knocked it out of the park. He had to study because his dad wouldn't let him watch the series, and of course he was young, but his dad wouldn't let him watch it. And then after his dad died, he didn't want to watch it. You know, you can. Well,
he was being punished because he shaved his eyebrows off.
Yeah, that's true. Is this some sort of gay thing?
I'm sure he had to learn how to be his father being someone else.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, crazy, not only to learn a character, but to learn it through an interpretation of the way your dad would do it. That seems like, you know, a lot to ask for, but yeah, pull it off. Definitely had his mannerisms down.
Absolutely. And we talked about Vera Farmiga as Livia Soprano. I thought she did a great job acting, but the one thing that it did distract me that she looked like Carmella. I mean, almost exactly like Carmella. Speaking of Carmella, there was one scene with Carmella De Angelis, which is her maiden name. Lauren DiMario was the actress who played her. Not really much of an impact on the overall story. John Bernthal played
Johnny Soprano.
Yeah, to me, it was like you didn't even need him in there because Dickie was the surrogate father. Bernthal or Johnny Boy's in jail for, you know, a good portion of the second half of the film. And he just, to me, it didn't really do much. It was like, okay, well, I'm playing Johnny Boy, but again, not a big role. Michael Imperioli, like we mentioned, played a played Chrissy, did the voiceover. And at the end, there's a, well, that's the guy I went to hell for. As you know, Tony's looking over the casket of Dickie Moltisanti, and then you hear the Sopranos theme kick in, which I thought was pretty cool. And then a couple of Tony's friends that we know from the series, Jackie April, and Artie Bucco, they're played by a couple of young actors, Chase Vaknin and Robert Vincent Montano. So it was a good cast. I thought a lot of people in that cast did a lot of great jobs. I'm probably going to watch it again because it's a movie. I'm going to give it a little time and I'm going to watch a bunch of different videos because I was really interested in the Easter eggs. And I spent like the first 15 minutes trying to pay attention and write that shit down. And I stopped and said, just watch the movie. So that's what I did. But I found a couple. I didn't find these myself. You know, I went and found them on another website. So let's see. Let's see. Oh, I did see before we get to that, like people were complaining. And when The Sopranos was originally out, there was no social media, right? I think maybe by 2007, there was Facebook and definitely MySpace, but I'm not sure. I don't remember.
That was about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you wanted to talk about The Sopranos, you went to a Sopranos forum or a place like that, or FARC or whatever, all those old places where we used to go. Now there's social media, so there's immediate criticism, immediate love, all that other crap, and people are fighting about it. I saw people complaining about the characters we just mentioned, and like Jeff said, some people were bitching, saying that it was like a Saturday Night Live parody. I saw people like weirdos complaining. I don't even know what to call them, but people bitching and complaining because there was a storyline about black people. It's like, it's ridiculous. It was a chunk of time, 1960s, late 1960s to the early 1970s. And major cities in the Northeast, I'm sure all over the country, but specifically in the Northeast, were experiencing a demographic change. And there was strife and, you know, there were scenes, people were bitching because they were like, oh, they're showing Black Lives Matter stuff. And
just shows how ignorant they are in history.
Right. Yeah. That didn't exist then. What existed then was white cops and white National Guard troops going through black neighborhoods with tanks and beating the shit out of and shooting.
And meanwhile, a white guy with a dead guy in the passenger seat could just go right by the cops and then just let him go.
Right. Go ahead, Dickie. We'll talk to you at the next meeting. But that was the reality. You know what I mean? And you can't whitewash it, not to pun it, but not to whitewash it. That was the reality. And David Chase isn't going to do it. You just have to remember, David Chase isn't going to do something that he doesn't want to do. And he isn't going to do something that doesn't further the story. And he's not going to do something set in an era that's not accurate. So I thought it was a great storyline. I like seeing that character, Harold McBrayer. You know, I like seeing him come up. And you are led to think that he's the one who kills Dickie Moltisanti, but he is not. Let's see.
What's all this woke shit people are talking about? Like the wife beating and the cheating on him and the murder and all that. But what's so woke about all that?
Oh, yeah. We can talk about that. So Dickie Moltisanti kills his father, Ray Liotta, who also plays his uncle that he goes to see in jail. Ostensibly, he kills him because Ray Liotta's character, Hollywood Dick, whatever, pushed her down the stairs and beat the shit out of her. And again, he's in his 60s and she's in her 20s. Dickie ends up taking her as his gumar and putting her in an apartment, and they end up banging and all this other stuff. But she has a thing for Harold McBrayer, and that's Leslie Odom Jr.'s character. So she ends up banging him, and so that bothered people for some reason. And she says, I thought it would be different. And he goes, why? He goes, I don't know. I heard it would be different, but it's the same. But they had, it starts out, she's interested in him as soon as she sees him. And so people are mad. Oh, they had interracial sex. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, they had to put that in there because before the 2000s, no one ever had. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And then Dickie finds out that she tells him, because she's mad at him, because the Gumars always get mad. They don't get to live in the house. They don't get to get married, blah, 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 blah. So she tells Dickie that she slept with, Harold, and he gets mad and drowns her. So that's why people are mad. Because again, we live in an era.
I didn't see anything woke in this though at all.
I didn't either.
What the fuck are people talking about? Woke.
Right.
This is anti woke.
I'm telling you. Yeah,
people are just trying to put things under a lens, no matter what it is.
Of today. You're looking at today.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're taking something that's a piece of another time that was made today, but taking something from another time and looking through it to today's lens. And it comes from both sides. Just like it's going on with Chappelle now. Chappelle is being, you know, from the left side or whatever, the very small group of people, you know, yelling at Chappelle and mad at him. And it's just, you know, I don't know how we're going to continue to make art if we have to put it through this lens. But anyway, more back to the Sopranos. I saw how Dickie was going to die very early in the film, way earlier than the end. I don't want to spoil that. I mean, we spoiled everything else, but it ends up, they're trying to lead you to believe that there's this war between Dickie Moltisanti and Harold McBrayer, and that Harold McBrayer wants to kill him. And you think that's what's going to happen, because you know through the whole film, if you're a Sopranos fan, how Dickie Moltisanti died. And he died just like Tony said in the original series. But you don't know who pulled the trigger until the very end and why the trigger was pulled. And basically, don't laugh at an old man falling down the stairs. Who wasn't an old man yet. Let's see. There are a couple of Easter eggs. I'll just read a couple of them here. It was nice to have Corey Stoll saying, "Your sister's cunt," which is a great line from Uncle Junior in the series when he falls down. "Oh, your sister's cunt." And
I liked what he was like, tried to have sex with his wife with his bad back. And he's like, "I can't do it."
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. But he falls down the steps, and I was like, he's gonna say it. "Your sister's cunt." Very funny. And Dickie Moltisanti laughs when he falls down the stairs, which he also does when he's coming out of the courtroom in the Sopranos series. He gets hit in the face with a microphone and falls down the steps, and no one laughs. He just uses it to get out of going to court. When Ray Liotta, Hollywood Dick, kicks his wife down the stairs, it's a callback to Janice Soprano kicking Ralphie down the stairs in season 4, episode 3. Remember, she kicked him down the stairs because she wanted to be with Bobby Bacalari after his wife died. Dickie constantly calls Tony Gugutz, and Tony calls his son AJ Gugutz. The pigeon in the garage after Dickie kills his dad foretells the bird in the window when Christopher gets made. Let's see. There was a line when later on in the series when Uncle Junior's Alzheimer's starts to manifest itself and they're eating dinner and he keeps repeating, "Your father never had the makings of a varsity athlete." Well, that line is actually in the series, but he doesn't say it so Tony can hear it. He goes, "I don't think he has what it takes to be a varsity athlete." Dickie shot Livia through the beehive in the car. Not Dickie, I'm sorry, Johnny Boy. They're coming back from someplace. The kids are in the back seat. Or they're going on a double date. And and Tony's mom's bitching. And so Tony's dad takes a gun, puts it up to her beehive, pulls the trigger, which is very unsettling. But Janice told that story in season 6 when they're all at that cabin before they get Tony and Bobby get in the big fight. And of course, you see a lot of places, most specifically Holston's, which is where the series wound up. The very final episode of the series that cuts to black. They're sitting in Holston's. Holston's is a place where they all go and have ice cream and shit. And then the pork store. So you see a lot going on in there. Livia's house. You also see for a while that Tony's mom and dad had moved to like a suburb. So you see an old 60s, 70s type house then. So that's kind of a little bit about the Many Saints of Newark that I really, really fucking enjoyed. And if you didn't enjoy it, well, that's your opinion. I'm not going to fight with you. But you have to really be a Sopranos fan, I guess, to really dig it, I suppose. Jeff, you were a huge Sopranos fan, so I'm glad that you liked it.
Yeah, I liked it.
I mean, you're not obsessed with the show like I have. How many times have you watched the series?
Just once.
Just once? You know how many times I've watched the whole series the whole way through?
13.
I would say probably between 15 and 20 times.
Wow.
Wow.
But nowadays, when I get to season 5, I kind of stop. And it just kind of becomes
a sign of mental illness, you know.
What is?
Watching the old shows over and over again is a sign of mental illness.
Who says?
People.
What people? No.
Then I'm headed towards dementia next week then.
Yeah.
I have a bad problem of not watching anything new because I'm busy watching something I've already watched six times.
Yeah, I get to new stuff too. But we did. I posted on our Facebook page, The Many Saints of Newark, your thoughts. And I want to read some of these comments. Pete says, I thought it was great. A little on the nose in some parts, but a good Sopranos story. And again, that's what it is, a Sopranos story. The thing with Uncle Junior was cool, says David. Tim Allen says, I enjoyed the movie. I do agree some of the characters maybe weren't the best casting. I guess I missed the woke parts or didn't care. There's another person who, you know, didn't see it. Let's see. Russell Rainey says, I really enjoyed it. I personally think David Chase is an effing genius in creating a show. I really like how he displays American nostalgia, but I have a newfound hatred for Uncle Junior. I think everybody does after this movie. I think those actors played the roles well. I think Tony didn't really want to get in the mob, but you kind of see that at the end. Jeff Malkonian.
Yeah, Malkonian.
Yeah, from the remakes. He gave it a big thumbs down and a gif. Michael Centers, a former intern of mine, said it had its moments, but the story and the pace of the whole movie was flat and clunky. The story and pace never materialized into anything. C minus. I have to disagree with you. Somebody wrote, Mark wrote, the best part about going to see this movie was the popcorn. And I disagree with that, but you know, hey, everybody has their opinion. Okay, here we go. Terribly woke, shoehorn screenwriting, some good acting, but overall a big mess. The impressions, particularly Sal, are SNL level, except for Olivia and Tony. And Fuxi replies, I will say that for being racist, it was funny how those mob guys only used the N-word once or twice. They didn't say that. They're Italian. They said Mugnan or Ditsun, things like that. Those were, it was regional. And because they're from Italy, those are the words that the Italians used back in the day. So, you know, whatever. Bobby Birchin says it was somehow great, but disappointing. Too long, but left me wanting more. I didn't love they went back to that amusement park scene because I thought the show had covered it already. It did cover it already. But it didn't go into the fact that Johnny Boy went to jail for quite some time. Let's see. A lot of writing here. Ira Malkin says, it's taken me three nights to watch it and I haven't finished it yet. Does that tell you anything? And Jerry and Fuxi again. Fuxi, by the way, on point with his comments. Come on, you make it sound as bad as the Irishman. And I like Eric Winter's comment. I'll get live plants for the aquarium once I'm used to the turtle, which I thought was funny. There's one scene where Dickie's buying a turtle. And we'll end it on a bad note. Wayne Blair says, chopped up piece of shit, should have made a limited series. Well, here's the good news. David Chase said no, or he hasn't really committed to it. I heard an interview with him this week where he said, I don't know. But the people who worked on it, the people who directed and Terrence Winter, they all want to make it a series, which I think would be cool. I think it would be cool to see a series of Tony and his friends, you know, forming his crew, because you see his buddies in the movie. And then some of the older guys, I'd love to see those guys play Sill and Pussy and
do the time between the end of the film and the beginning of the show.
Or make it go at least to the 80s or something like that. Yeah. But then again, to me, you know, the generation before us had Star Trek, and we also had Star Trek. But to me, this is kind of my Star Trek. This is the show that I'm obsessed with and will die probably being obsessed with. So anyway, thanks for listening to us talk about The Many Saints of Newark. Hey, you hungry? I got an idea for you. Why don't you go to Atlanta Pizza in Euro? That's Atlanta Pizza in Euro in Conyers, Georgia. That's right. They have delicious pizza and delicious gyros. We've been there a bunch of times. We've done a couple of shows there. We've done a couple of meet and greets there. In fact, we're planning on going back sometime in November or sometime in the fall to do another like live recording. And more on that when we know more about it. But first things first, let's talk about Atlanta Pizza and Gyro. They have brand new options for you. They have gluten-free crusts, vegan cheese, and as always, they have a lot of great local craft beers at reasonable prices. Now, Steph, don't they have a food truck?
They do have a food truck, and we all want to catch a ride in this food truck, like big time. Yeah. And I think they've done a few things so far that went very well, he said. Mm-hmm. And just to go back, though, the craft beer thing that you were talking about, I had some really good beer the last time I was there. I was like, okay. I think it was Tropicalia or something. I'd never had it before. And now that's like one of my favorite beers. So they have,
hell yeah.
I think that's what it was, but they have really great beers there. And Mike, he likes to bring you around the little taster. Let's take a little sip. You don't have to buy the whole thing. You know, maybe you don't know. He'll like, here, take a sip and then you can get it if you want to. That's what I love about them.
I don't mind a little beer every now and then, a good tasty brew to go with your pizza. And hey, keep it in the family.
Just add a pizza.
Yeah, Dustin, let's keep it in the family. I was just about to say that. Now, someone in your family works there.
Yeah, my oldest son, Rylan, he's a server there. So when you walk in and you see a 6'5" dude come up and ask you what you want to eat, that's my son. He enjoys it. He loves the people there. It's a great atmosphere. You know, they've had long existing customers that come in there, you know, all the time. It's like a family. It's kind of like a cheer situation. He loves working there.
And he's bringing home free pizzas too, right?
Yeah, that's a perk from time to time. But,
Mike Hall has been a supporter of Radio Labyrinth for a very long time, and we thank him for that. Mike and his lovely wife have always supported us, and couldn't find a nicer couple. And we would like everybody to patronize the restaurant, which is in Conyers, and maybe Dustin will be there. How about that? It's AtlantaPizzaGiro.com if you want to find out more about it. Look at the menu. And try it. I mean, it's good pizza. So
it's great pizza. Killer crust, killer cheese. He has great sauce. I mean, I haven't tried the vegan pizza yet, which I don't know. You know, I'm sure that Mike is going to make it wonderful,
right?
No matter what it is.
Does it have pepperoni on it?
No.
Oh.
It's vegan.
Oh.
they make vegan pepperoni.
I'm sure it's delicious. Sure, vegan pepperoni is delicious. But now on a vegan, can't you use Beyond Meat? And then it's sort of like meat, but it isn't.
There's a lot more alternatives than they used to be. That's for sure.
You can use the Impossible Bat.
Don't bring
Mike does not put bat in his pizza.
Mike does not want people thinking that he puts Impossible Bat in his pizza. So please, I mean, not even real bat, let alone Impossible Bat. Check out Atlanta Pizza in Nero there on Facebook. And they are, and the links are all here for you to click on and to go check it out. That's AtlantaPizzaEuro.com.
And we're back.
Thank you, Jeff. We are back. So now why don't we talk a little bit about the television show that's sweeping the entire country? Everybody seems to love it. It is on Netflix, and it is called The Many Squids of Korea.
I thought you were doing like a Howard Cosell.
That's
thing
what I thought too. I was like, this could be Howard Cosell through the whole
thing. Howard Cosell narrating the Squid Games.
Overall perfect type of Howard Cosell. Most people don't even know who he is. So are you guys both watching the show?
Yeah.
Squid Games?
I just started it.
You just started it. So what episode are you on?
Still one.
Are you not into it, or did you just start it? And you're like,
I just started it at 6 o'clock today.
Oh, okay. Well, it gets right into it, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, I like this. I like the story. I like the it's very violent and very gruesome, also very cartoonish. I'm watching it with the overdubs instead of with the
subtitles
because I read that the subtitles aren't translated properly
because it changes the aspects of the story.
All these Korean shows seem like the subtitles, they get it wrong. I remember the same thing was happening in Kingdom when I was watching that. I was watching it with the English dub, but I had the subtitles on, and the things that people were saying, what they were showing in the subtitles was not what they were saying.
Right. It might also be that it's Korean speaking Americans who aren't Korean, but they can speak it, and they don't catch the cultural nuances or regional things. Colloquialisms. That's a hard word to say. Colloquialisms. Whatever, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But so that's why I watch it with the overdubs. It's easier to understand. But it's a good show, man. I'm on episode 5. I should be able to finish it by the weekend, the end of the week. And I get why people are digging it. But have you seen some of these news stories? Jeff, you posted something about
they're selling merch.
Yeah. So they're opening, well, they're doing pop-up stores, right? So they opened a pop-up store in the center of Paris, and there ended up being a riot. People in line fighting over the crap, and, you know, people like beating the shit out of each other.
Wow.
And, yeah. And it was just the other day in Paris. I can't imagine people waving me like Cabbage Patch Frenzy.
What's weird is the guy that created it, his name is Huang Dong Hyuk.
Yep.
And he wrote the show in like 2009, and it was rejected for like, he kept going to the studios, and it was rejected for like 10 years before they finally decided to agree to make it.
Really?
I mean, to the point that it says on one of these that he had to stop writing the script and sell his $675 laptop due to just be able to survive. And then he had to hold on to the flash drive until he could get another computer to complete it. But, and that, what's funny is today it's like number one in like 90 countries, like the biggest show. And it's soon to be Netflix's, most watched show they've had since the beginning of Netflix.
Which, isn't that funny how these shows come out of nowhere and they get picked up and they just become these worldwide sensations? It's humongous. It's every country in the world is watching it. Maybe
I wonder if it's because reality shows weren't as big as they are now back then in the early 2000s.
Maybe.
Well, that, or, what was it? Not last year, but the year before, Korea stepped into the limelight, winning Best Picture of the Year.
Yeah.
And since then, all these things have been greenlit. Plus, I think a lot of it too has to do with Netflix and them losing all of their licensing to all the other streaming services and having to then bring in more content. And the first thing they start bringing in is all of this content from South Korea. So I think them putting it on the world stage on their platform, it's, I don't think it's so much that this stuff is so excellent and so great. I think that it's as good as anything made in the US, but never had the platform before to be able to be enjoyed by as many and get as popular as it has.
Yeah.
And so I think that's has a lot to do with it. But plus, I mean, this story for Squid Game is not it's not an original story. It's been done multiple times since Battle Royale.
Yeah. Battle Royale is a great movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was great. And it was so hidden for such a long time. And it was kind of like something you couldn't even get it in the US for like 5 or 6 years until they finally released it over here. And Quentin Tarantino did that. I mean, he brought it over here. It was that was one of his things. He brings a lot of, he used to bring a lot of Korean film over to the US through his little production company that he had for Blu-rays and DVDs.
Mm-hmm. I need to watch Parasite. I really do. Do you guys both see it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Well, we all recommend it. So if you, Jeff, keep watching it, it gets better and better. If you haven't seen it yet, give it a chance. It's a good show. Squid Games on Netflix. A couple other stories that are kicking around out there. There's a new Star Trek docuseries that's going to be coming to history. No word on release date, but they're going to be talking about every season. Every single season is, 55 years of this show. And they're going to be talking to actors and people who performed. And of course, it's Star Trek. So, if you like Star Trek, watch it. Agatha Harkness is going to be spun off from the WandaVision series. So she'll have her own thing. Catherine Hahn will return to reprise her role. Did you guys like that character?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's good. But, Hollywood has a problem with witches.
Why?
I'm making fun of Sarah Silverman being mad at Catherine Hahn for playing Joan Rivers.
Yeah, that I saw that story. That was a very weird story, because if you flip it around, how many people who aren't Christians have played? It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand why she cares. Did she want to play Joan Rivers? Is that what bothers her?
That's what it came off to me, is she obviously was jealous.
Yeah, that's what I think. because I think she would have been a great Joan Rivers, by the way, because she sort of looks
She'd be a better Melissa Rivers.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Too old to be Melissa Rivers, but maybe, I don't know. But I think, it's a old casting choice. So I'm sure Agatha can pull it off. I'm sure that Catherine can pull it off. And I don't know what the fuck she's talking about. Sarah Silverman just says shit and gets in the news cycle, and then you don't hear from her again for a little while. But yeah. So
I'll watch it.
I will.
I'll watch it.
I thought WandaVision was one of the better Marvels. Just a couple of the what ifs. That's good. I got to keep watching that. And we already talked about people aren't too happy with Chappelle's latest special.
Anybody watch it but me?
I haven't watched it yet. I'm going to watch
they don't,
it.
It was very funny.
The people that are getting upset about it, it was said from a side of building them up, not tearing them down, but it's taken.
And he knew this was going to be the last one.
Oh, yeah. So I'm sure he stuck it in and twisted it.
Yeah, he wanted to make his mm-hmm. point. And he did. He made it very, very well.
Yeah.
But you got to watch for the part where Chappelle meets Steph in a bar in Detroit.
Steph.
Yeah. Oh, she wanted to talk. And she's like, bitch, I don't care about your subway tile.
That was a good Chappelle. On to what everybody watched and staff
picks. Yeah, we just do our staff picks everyone because we talked about Moses.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, we did.
I'll run down real quick what you watch. Go ahead.
The Billions finale. Mm-hmm. Corey Stoll's taking over for what's his name?
Does he have a wig or is he bald?
No, he's bald.
Okay.
But Damian Lewis is leaving the series now after season 5 ended because his wife passed.
Oh. Yeah, he was just finishing his storyline, and then he was out.
Yeah, so they made a point of showing a promo for season 6, say, hey, the show's not going to end just because, and like Homeland,
right?
When he left Homeland, so I'm going to keep watching and see how it goes. Watching Only Murders in the Building still.
We're behind on that. The last episode we watched was the one with Nathan. What's his name? Nathan Lane's son.
There's like a big twist this week. Won't give anything away. What We Do in the Shadows, the Baron came back on last week's episode.
Ooh, I have to watch that.
Yeah. Remember the Baron? He was like wearing that New Jersey Devil's cap and eating real food. And
throwing up. Yeah.
Yeah. Ted Lasso, Sam Richardson was on, who we love. La Brea, you got into that?
I watched both. There's only 2 episodes right now, right?
Yeah
I watched the first one.
Oof, I don't know. I mean, I got a lot of criticisms of it.
I couldn't get Land of the Lost after you guys had mentioned it. The whole time I was watching it, I was going, wow, that's so Land of the Lost, it's not even funny.
But Land of the Lost is better.
Yeah. I messaged Wesley a year and I told him he needs to record a theme song for it.
I wrote one if you want to hear it.
Yeah, do it.
Caveat before I read it, I messed up the son's name. Do you guys remember the son's name?
On the show? No.
All right, well, this is the husband's name anyway. Eve, Izzy, and Gavin had a mundane conversation. Then a black lady cop fell down a hole. Izzy got away thanks to her phony leg as mom and son fell 10,000 feet below to the land. That's not Land of the Lost.
That's very accurate.
Mundane conversations these people are having. They fell through a hole. They're in another fucking dimension or in the past.
In the past, I think. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're in the post ice age, whatever, pre ice. It doesn't matter. They're in the mammalian past, 10,000 years ago, and one of the people that fell through happens to be a psychiatrist, and she's talking to him about her problems with her son. I haven't really done enough for my son, so I have to save him now that he's been attacked by a prehistoric wolf. I mean, there's a lot of that shit in there and just pointless, ridiculous dialogue. And I'm not going to leave you. I'm not going to let my son die. It's going to be slow, but I'm going to save you. No. You're going to get the medicine. You're going to run back and save your kid who just got bit by a wolf. So there's a lot of that ridiculous shit. I like some of the stuff. I like the mythology that's going on. I like the world building. I like the husband who's, you know, in present day having these weird mind
visions.
Yeah. Some of that's cool. It's definitely a network show. So it's definitely got all the boxes checked as far as the casting goes and who's what, who's the leader and who's going to do this and who's going to do that. But other than that,
their movie.
Huh?
I think it would have made a better movie than it's making a show.
Right.
They'd have condensed everything down. Yeah.
Speaking of that, Midnight Mass, I watched all of that.
I liked Midnight Mass. I liked it too,
but if they would have taken out all the monologues, the whole thing would have just been a 2-hour movie.
Right, right. Yeah, there was a shit ton of monologues. I thought it was good. I love it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I liked it. I mean, he's so milked so many, you know, little things from Stephen King's story, like all the character building was almost verbatim, you know, from other things. You know, like I said before, they don't need to remake Salem's Lot. I mean, it's there's no way it's going to be as good as this was seeing it fresh, you know, seeing it, you know, not expecting anything of it. And what you got was a really good interpretation of a modern Salem's Lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Only thing missing was there wasn't any James Mason walking around and touching ashtrays and other antiques. The master would be here shortly. Yeah, I thought everybody did a good job. Henry Thomas was cool playing the dad. It took me a while. I knew he was in it, but once I looked at the cast before I started watching, and I knew Henry Thomas was in it. I'm watching, I'm going, who the fuck is Henry Thomas playing? So I had to look at the cast again. And, oh, he's playing the dad.
Yeah.
And I love the whole plot of them in the communion wine, getting the blood of whatever that thing was. It's like I say, it was obviously it's a vampire.
Right.
I never seen. It's an angel.
Yeah, the people in the town have never heard of vampires or read any Bram Stoker.
Right. They don't know anything. Yeah. Well, we don't know about garlic. We don't know. Well, certainly crosses don't work.
Yeah. I like the, what was that one line the guy said? He goes, now Mike, go get your wife and come back up here. He goes, I think I just killed her.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a slow build. And then the last two episodes are complete insanity.
Yeah, once they get in the church.
Everybody's a Cylon.
What?
When everybody's a Cylon.
Yeah, everybody's a Cylon.
Yeah.
Michael Trucco is in it from Battlestar Galactica, the new version. Good show, though. I recommend
it. Yeah, I watched it all. Yeah. I watched Saturday Night Live season premiere. And
you're one of the few.
Yeah, it's the lowest rated episode ever.
Mm-hmm.
And Eli Roth's History of Horror came back this week too. They did sequels in the first episode. So it talks about like the Nightmare on Elm Street sequels and Halloween sequels and stuff like that. It was good. And my staff pick is going to be The Movies That Made Us. New season comes out this week.
Oh,
and
cool.
They're doing all horror movies.
Nice. Oh, cool. Yeah, those are always good.
Let's see. I'll bust through mine real quick. We already talked about most of these. Midnight Mass. I watched all of it. Many Saints of Newark, Squid Game, La Brea. Very good episode of Talking Sopranos podcast, which you can watch on YouTube or listen to. It was all Many Saints of Newark cast members, including Alessandro Nivola, Michael Gandolfini, Corey Stoll, David Chase, who is the creator, of course, and Leslie Odom Jr. There's a lot of really cool talk. And if you know, they do live commercials. So to hear Michael Imperioli and Steven Chirippa talk about Blue Chew.
Talking about Blue Chew?
Yeah, they read the reviews that they did. Steven, he's like, guy calls him Bobby. Dear Bobby, your pills that you chew up, they get my dick rock hard. That's really funny. I'm currently listening to an audiobook called Coen Brothers, which Ira recommended to me like 4 years ago. Finally getting around to it. It's a good book. And my staff pick is Aquaman, King of Atlantis, a 3-part animated DC series featuring the voice of Cooper Andrews, Jillian Jacobs, Thomas Lennon, and Dana Schneider. I wonder who he's going to do. And that takes place, that drops on the 14th on HBO Max. I like a lot of that. I've always liked the DC animated
DC animated. They're almost better than almost all of the DC movies they've made.
And they're better than the Marvel animated too. My favorite animated Marvel film came out, I don't know when it came out, within the last 10 years or so, was the Black Panther animated movie, which I thought was really good. And I've talked about that before.
So the What Ifs are the best Marvel animation they've ever done, I think, as far as the quality of the animation.
Right.
I've only watched the first two, but the first one I liked an awful lot, with whatever her name was, Captain Britain or whatever. Go ahead, Dustin.
Again, we've went through all this. Squid Game. Let's see, La Brea. I did start watching, because I haven't watched American Horror Story probably since season 6 or 7, man, 5 or 6 maybe. But I started watching season 10. Yeah, I'm about 3 episodes in, and I'm probably going to nope out of it, only because, again, Midnight Mass was so good, and this has a lot of similarities as far as the setting is kind of the same. You know, weird. I think at this point they're just trying to throw weird at you and see what sticks. And and it does. I mean, it just doesn't have the same, you know, knee jerk reaction you used to have to these American Horror Stories. They've kind of, I think, worked themselves into a hole.
Season, it seems like I nope out anymore. Like the first maybe 2 or 3 were great, but then anymore, I end up with like 10 of them on the DVR and I just end up deleting them.
I think so. The first 4 seasons were excellent. Yeah. And then it just became almost like he was just trying to finish them.
It starts off good. Yeah. Then the next seasons, they start off good. Like 3 or 4 episodes are good. And then it's like just boring.
Yeah. Last one we watched was The Hotel. And I thought that one was good. You know, I liked all the serial killers in that one.
Yeah.
My staff pick is actually a movie that we mentioned a couple weeks ago. One of the Amazon originals. It's called Bingo Hell. And it's available on Amazon Prime now. It's a bingo hall where the devil comes in and opens a new bingo hall in this existing bingo hall from this small community. And it's very much a Needful Things kind of setup where he offers them these big prizes, but really he's winning like their souls. But Richard Brake plays Mr. Big, the devil character. And he's, if you guys remember Mandy, the guy that was in the lab that was creating all the acid that had the tiger, and his pupils were like gigantic.
Yeah.
He plays the bad guy in this and does such a great job. It's kind of, you know, and it's very similar to Mandy in that, with all the colors and kind of the psychedelic part of it. It is very, you know, cheesy B movie, horror movie. But if you like that kind of stuff, it's a fun watch. Bingo Hell on Amazon Prime.
Bingo Hell. Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Dustin. Before we get to views or snooze, hopefully next week I'll have a review of The Velvet Underground, a new documentary by Todd Haynes. I signed up and I got approved, so hopefully I can watch some of these new movies on Apple's preview platform. And next week on the show, we have Emily Hine Warren, who donated money to CHOA, which is Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, for the WSB Carathon. And she's going to come on, sit in and watch the show. And she has a game that she's going to present to us. That looks like fun. Like we said earlier, we're going to be speaking. Our next Radio Labyrinth Presents interview will be with Gilbert Lawand and Mike Albanese from the Red Clay Comedy Festival. And that's it. Let's do views or snooze.
Okay. Hello, America. Once again, it's time for your favorite pastime. Which one will they choose? Play along with this week's edition of Views or Snooze. Take it away, Jeff.
Okay. Number one is CSI Vegas came back this week. Anybody watch it or gonna watch it?
It's tough for me. I don't know. I like Grissom.
I like the original CSI. I want to watch it.
I'm going to give it to you.
I'll view at least the first episode.
Yes. Yeah. Muppets Haunted Mansion. This comes out this week on Disney Plus.
Snooze.
Is this a straight up Muppets, like they did the Muppets movie? So movie, mixed people and Muppets.
Yeah.
I'll give it a view.
The whole post Henson Muppets thing, it's hit or miss.
Yeah. Sometimes they do really good and others not so much.
I'll give it a views.
Yeah, I'll view it.
And then the last one is Chucky. This is the spin-off series about the doll.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Jennifer Tilly's doing voice and Brad Dourif's doing the voice of Chucky, as always.
That's 100% views for me.
That's going to be on Sci-Fi Network. And I think they're running it on USA Network also.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
And it's written by Don Mancini too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he wrote them all the good. Yeah. Yeah, I'll do that for sure.
That's a views for me too.
Good time to get into watching some Chucky. Thank you guys. If you are interested in adopting and shopping for your next pet and you want to help out, go to barkvilledogrescue.org and don't be one of those people that says, you know, I'm home a lot. I'm going to get a dog and then, oh, I'm going to go back to work. I'm going to take the dog back. No, don't do that. Find a dog that you can love and that your family can love and that will love you and bring them into your home and share that love. So again, barkvilledogrescue.org. And if you can't, if you can't adopt, then go ahead and donate a little bit. They also have cats. And Steph will be back next week. And until that time, please remember to keep it canon. At Radio Labyrinth, we are supported by Patreon. That's right. And our top Patreon donors are called producers. And we have a slew of them. And I want to read their names and thank them right now because we haven't done that in a while. First of all, Chris Chandler, thank you very much. And if you guys want to weigh in on any of these people, please jump in.
The former quarterback, right, for the Falcons. It's not that Chris Chandler.
No, it's not Crystal Chandelier. It is not Crystal Chandelier, but it is Chris Chandler. It's also not WSB's Chris Chandler. It's a different Chris Chandler. There's lots of Chris Chandlers, as it turns out.
Our Patreon's the best Chris Chandler.
It is the best.
Absolutely. And the best Brett Perkins in the country is also one of our Patreon members.
Big buttery Brett.
Big buttery Brett. Butter him up. Todd Ellis, thank you very much for donating. Roby Neely, who you can hear from time to time on the always consistent Mike TV podcast, which is on our channel, hosted by Lisa Krause and Dean. Yeah.
And shout out to Roby too, because he was just in a car accident. He's okay.
I saw that.
Oh no.
Yeah.
That sucks. But no, Dean and Lisa do a good job when they actually do the show, and Roby is a good contributor to that show. So check it out. If you've never listened, go through our little back archive, and they do really, 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 really deep dive. another Patreon producer, Tim Slayton, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Brian Smith, who he and his fiance are getting married in October on Halloween, and is a Halloween-themed wedding. I hope I get to go. But if not, I wish them the best. They're great, great peeps, and they're big supporters of Dragon Con. Usually see them down there. Didn't get to this year. John Sutherland, a great dude. We've known him for quite a while. Been a supporter for a very long time. John, thank you very much. He got me a real cool gift one year. I drew a kiss drawing for him, and he got it framed or put in glass. It was really cool.
Oh, he was great in MASH, too.
Yes, he was. He was really good in MASH. Mike D. Thank you, Mike D. We've always said it that way. Emily Hine Warren, who will be joining us because she donated to Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, the WSB Carathon. And one of the packages was you get to sit in and watch us do Radio Labyrinth on Zoom. So she'll be doing that very soon.
And because she's Emily Hine Warren.
Well, yeah, she's awesome. Yeah. Buck Monterey, want to thank you very much. Another longtime producer.
I always feel like he played Archie on All in the Family.
You think? Matt Carter, thank you very much. Matt Carter, another longtime sponsor and also
a sweet, 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 wonderful man.
Yes, he is. Mike Hall, who we mentioned, he's also a sponsor. And longtime donor, Eric Malmstrom. He's always funny on social media and supports us and interacts with us. And last but not least, Mr. Chad Shepard, who gave us this, the Redbox Troll, another longtime donor, former intern of mine, coworker, really nice
chap.
And he's awesome. And there we go. Yeah, look at that pop out like a green penis. if you'd like to be a Patreon member, we have different levels and those levels change from time to time, but what's always consistent is if you come in as a producer, that's $25 a month. You off the bat, you get to pick one of our t-shirts. So now would be a good time, because in a couple of weeks, well, while you're watching this, odds are we're going to have a new t-shirt or something that you want, and those links will all be made available to you. So thank you guys, and we appreciate it very much.
Please hang up and try again.